At the center of Wall Street, money moves faster than law. Screens flicker, trades land, profits stack. Inside one hedge fund, winning is not just expected, it is demanded. Every morning brings pressure. Every miss carries consequences. The question is never how much you make, it is how fast. Federal agents are listening. Phones are tapped, conversations are recorded in real time. Analysts talk, portfolio managers respond. Information flows in ways it should not. Tips arrive early, trades follow, the machine keeps working. Publicly, the firm denies everything. Internally, the pressure does not ease. Performance matters more than caution. Compliance exists, but it never slows the engine. The profits are real, so are the risks. When arrests begin, the story fractures. Some traders fall, others remain untouched. Prosecutors circle the firm but stop short of its leader. A record settlement follows, historic in scale, but limited in consequence. The case leaves one question hanging in the air. In American finance, is success ever too big to jail? Chapter 1, The Machine That Never Lost. The office wakes up before the city. Screens glow in the dark. Coffee goes cold. Numbers start moving before the opening bell. Inside SAC Capital, this is routine. The fund does not wait for markets to settle. It hunts. Traders sit in tight clusters, each group assigned to a sector. Healthcare, technology, consumer goods, energy. Every pod runs like a small business inside a much larger one. Analysts feed information upward. Portfolio managers make the calls. Performance is tracked daily, sometimes hourly. There is no hiding from the numbers. At the center of it all is Stephen Cohen. He is not on the trading floor every day, but his presence is constant. His expectations shape everything. Cohen built his reputation as a relentless trader with a near-mythical instinct for the market. He expects returns. He expects speed. He expects winners. SAC's growth is explosive. What starts as a modest hedge fund becomes one of the most profitable trading operations in Wall Street history. Year after year, SAC posts gains even when markets stumble. While other firms bleed during downturns, SAC keeps printing money. Investors notice. So do competitors. So do regulators. The firm's edge is framed as intelligence, better research, better analysts, better instincts. SAC spends heavily on information. It hires top talent from banks, competitors, and academia. It builds expert networks, paying consultants and industry insiders to explain complex sectors. On paper, this is legal. Many funds do the same. But the pace is different here. Information is expected to arrive early. Trades are expected to land before the news breaks. Being right is not enough. Being first is everything. The pressure flows downward. Analysts know their jobs depend on ideas that move the needle. Portfolio managers know capital is allocated to those who deliver. If a pod underperforms, it gets cut. If a trader stalls, he is replaced. The message is clear without being spoken. Produce or disappear. Compliance exists, but it is not the loudest voice in the room. Training sessions are held. Rules are circulated. Employees sign acknowledgments. Yet the culture rewards results, not restraint. When profits surge, questions fade. When losses appear, scrutiny sharpens. Outside the firm, regulators begin to notice patterns. SAC traders seem unusually accurate around major announcements, earnings surprises, drug trial results, mergers. The timing is sharp. The consistency raises eyebrows. Tips and complaints drift into regulatory offices. Nothing solid at first, just noise. But the noise keeps coming. The Securities and Exchange Commission opens preliminary inquiries. So do federal prosecutors. They look at trading records. They map communications. They flag names. SAC is not the only firm under scrutiny, but it stands out. The profits are too steady. The wins too well-timed. Inside SAC, little changes. The machine keeps running. Traders keep trading. Performance reviews continue. Bonuses grow. The firm's internal risk systems track exposure, not legality. If compliance flags something, it is discussed. Rarely does it stop a trade. Some employees feel the tension. Conversations become more guarded. Phones are put down more quickly. Emails get shorter, but the pressure to perform does not ease. If anything, it intensifies. A slowdown would raise more suspicion than aggressive trading. By the late 2000s, the government shifts strategy. Instead of focusing only on firms, prosecutors begin targeting individuals. The theory is simple. Traders talk, traders flip, build cases from the bottom up. The first arrests hit the industry like a shockwave. A hedge fund manager outside SAC is charged. Then another. Wiretaps are revealed. Recorded calls make headlines. The message is unmistakable. Federal agents are listening. Within SAC, fear and denial coexist. Some traders convince themselves they are clean. Others worry about past conversations. Management reassures staff that the firm operates within the law. Lawyers are consulted. Policies are reviewed. But the structure stays the same. Stephen Cohen keeps distance. He is careful with words. He delegates. He relies on layers of management. Publicly, he maintains confidence. Privately, he understands the stakes. If the firm is charged, the consequences could be existential. The government's focus tightens. Investigators trace trades back through analyst notes and phone logs. They look for patterns of information flow. Who spoke to whom? When? What changed afterward? The work is slow and meticulous. Months turn into years. Early signs point to a troubling reality. Some SAC traders appear to have received information that could not have come from public sources. In several cases, trades are placed just days, sometimes hours, before major announcements. The profits are significant. The explanations are thin. Still, nothing has reached the top. The firm's structure insulates leadership. Cohen does not place most of the trades himself. He oversees. He allocates capital. He demands performance. Whether he knows the source of every winning idea is harder to prove. This is the central tension that will define the case. Is SAC a collection of rogue traders who crossed the line? Or is it a system designed to extract information by any means while keeping its leader legally distant? At this stage, the question remains unanswered. What is clear is that SAC's success is no accident. It is engineered, it is enforced, it is relentless. The machine does not slow down on its own. It never has. As federal agents continue listening and as prosecutors quietly build their cases, SAC capital keeps trading. Profits keep coming. The gap between legal theory and market reality grows wider. And somewhere inside the firm, the pressure to win keeps pushing people closer to a line that is easier to cross than to see. The investigation is no longer hypothetical. It is active, it is expanding, and it is getting closer. Chapter 2, Inside the Tip Pipeline. The arrests change everything. Not all at once, not loudly, but the shift is real. Phones ring differently, conversations shorten, people listen more than they speak. Federal prosecutors have moved past theory. They are building cases, one trader at a time. The strategy is deliberate. Start small. Pressure individuals with clear evidence, offer deals, trade reduced sentences for cooperation. It works because it always does. People talk when the alternative is prison. The first guilty pleas do not come from SAC directly, but they circle close enough to rattle nerves. Wiretaps surface in court filings. Traders joke about secrets on recorded lines. Analysts hint at information they should not have. The public hears how casually lines are crossed when money is on the table. Investigators widen the net. They look for connections, who spoke before a trade, who benefited after. They do not need to prove the entire system at once. They just need proof that the pipeline exists. At SAC, the pressure to deliver never eases. If anything, it sharpens. Portfolio managers still expect results. Capital still shifts toward winners. Underperformers are still pushed out. The market does not pause for investigations. Some traders justify their behavior as industry norm. Everyone talks, everyone shares color, everyone wants an edge. Others convince themselves they never explicitly asked for illegal information. The line is blurry by design, but the recordings remove ambiguity. On tape, intent becomes harder to deny. Prosecutors now have cooperating witnesses. Former SAC traders admit receiving inside information. Some describe how analysts cultivated sources, corporate employees, consultants, doctors tied to drug trials, executives with access to earnings data. The sources are paid, sometimes indirectly, sometimes in cash. The structure matters. Information does not move randomly. Analysts gather intelligence. They pass it to portfolio managers. Trades follow. The profits flow upward. Bonuses reinforce the behavior. This is what investigators focus on. Not just illegal tips, but the system that absorbs and rewards them. Internal communications become critical. Emails show urgency. Messages emphasize timing. Language dances around explicit illegality, but points in the same direction. Be early. Be right. Do not ask too many questions. SAC's defense hardens. The firm insists that any wrongdoing is isolated. Rogue traders. Bad apples. Management did not authorize illegal behavior. Compliance policies exist. Training sessions were mandatory. Violations were not tolerated. Prosecutors counter with structure. They argue that the environment made misconduct predictable. When returns are demanded daily and when early information is celebrated, lines get crossed. The system does not need explicit orders. It needs incentives. Wiretaps deepen the case. Recorded calls capture traders reacting to non-public information. Trades are placed quickly. The timing aligns too cleanly to dismiss. In court, these recordings play like confessions without words. As more traders plead guilty, the pressure mounts. Each plea narrows the gap between misconduct and management. Each cooperating witness adds texture. This was not a single lapse. It was repeated behavior. Still, the top remains insulated. Stephen Cohen is careful. He rarely appears in the evidence. He communicates through layers. He does not ask where information comes from. He asks whether trades will make money. This distance becomes his shield. Prosecutors can show that illegal trades occurred. They can show that SAC benefited. Proving that Cohen knew specific tips were illegal is far harder. The firm's internal response walks a fine line. Lawyers advise cooperation without admission. Public statements emphasize compliance. Internally, employees are told to stay calm. The message is subtle but clear. Keep working. Do not panic. Some traders leave. Others are fired quietly. A few are sacrificed publicly. The machine sheds parts to protect its core. The investigation stretches on. Years pass. Evidence piles up. Prosecutors build leverage not just with facts, but with optics. SAC is now a symbol, a hedge fund so successful that it seems untouchable. That narrative matters. Inside the U.S. Attorney's Office, debates take place. How far can this go? Can a firm be criminally charged without convicting its leader? What precedent would that set? The answer comes slowly. The case is strong enough to force a reckoning, but not strong enough to put Stephen Cohen in handcuffs. By the time negotiations begin, both sides understand the reality. SAC faces overwhelming evidence of criminal conduct by its employees. The government faces the difficulty of proving intent at the very top. The pipeline has been exposed. The system has been mapped. The question now is not whether laws were broken. It is who will pay the price. As talks move behind closed doors, the market watches quietly. Wall Street understands what is coming. Not justice in its purest form. Something more complicated. The machine that never lost is finally slowing. Not because it wants to, because it has to. And the outcome will test the limits of accountability in American finance. Chapter 3. Too Big to Jail. The end does not arrive with a raid or a perp walk. It comes quietly, through lawyers and conference rooms, through drafts marked confidential. By the time the public hears the number, the decision has already been made. In November 2013, federal prosecutors announced that SAC Capital Advisors will plead guilty to criminal charges. The firm agrees to pay a record fine totaling $1.8 billion. It is the largest insider trading settlement in United States history. The language matters. SAC admits that its employees engaged in illegal insider trading. It accepts responsibility as a firm, but no individual at the top is charged. Stephen Cohen is not accused of a crime. Instead, the case resolves through a deferred prosecution agreement. SAC agrees to stop managing outside investor money. It agrees to strict compliance oversight. In exchange, prosecutors agree not to pursue further criminal charges against the firm itself. For Wall Street, the message is confusing. The firm is guilty. The founder is not. The penalty is massive. The punishment is limited. SAC shuts its doors to outside capital and reemerges as a family office, managing Cohen's personal wealth. The name changes. The structure shifts. The money stays. To critics, the outcome feels incomplete. Traders go to prison. Analysts lose careers. The firm pays a fine that, while historic, represents a fraction of the profits earned during the years under scrutiny. Cohen remains one of the richest people in finance. Prosecutors defend the result. They argue that the evidence justified the charges brought. They point to the guilty pleas. They highlight the fine. They say the case proves that no firm is beyond the reach of the law. But they also acknowledge limits. Criminal law requires proof beyond a reasonable doubt. For Stephen Cohen, that proof never fully materialized. Regulators take a separate path. The Securities and Exchange Commission files a civil case against Cohen for failure to supervise his employees. In January 2016, Cohen settles. He neither admits nor denies the allegations. he agrees to a 2-year ban from managing outside money. Again, the outcome splits opinion: a ban without admission, a settlement without trial, accountability without a verdict. Inside the industry, the lesson is absorbed carefully. Compliance departments grow, training sessions expand, expert networks are scrutinized more closely, but the pressure to win remains. Hedge funds still live and die by performance. The SAC case becomes a reference point, a warning and a reassurance at the same time. Yes, firms can be charged. Yes, fines can be enormous. But leaders who keep distance and delegate risk may avoid personal criminal exposure. This is the heart of the debate. Is justice served when a firm pleads guilty but its founder walks free? Does scale change the meaning of punishment? Does a fine, even a large one, truly deter behavior that once generated far greater returns? Stephen Cohen does not retreat from finance. After his regulatory ban expires, he launches Point72 Asset Management. The firm grows quickly. Talent follows. Capital returns. Cohen also buys the New York Mets, stepping into a new public role. To his supporters, this is redemption. A disciplined trader who learned from failure. A businessman who paid the price and moved on. To critics, it is proof of a system tilted in favor of the powerful. A demonstration that consequences in finance are often transactional, not personal. The traders who pleaded guilty live with different outcomes. Some serve prison sentences. Others struggle to rebuild careers. Their names are etched into court records. Their calls replayed in hearings. Their roles are clear. The contrast is stark. Accountability lands hardest at the lower levels. At the top, it becomes abstract. Years later, the case still shapes conversations. Law schools study it. Regulators cite it. Journalists revisit it. Each time, the same question surfaces. What does justice look like when wrongdoing is systemic? When incentives drive behavior? When leaders benefit without touching the details? The SAC case does not offer a clean answer. It exposes a gap between legal standards and moral judgment, between what can be proven and what feels true. For prosecutors, the case is both a victory and a frustration. They dismantled a powerful firm. They secured historic penalties. They also watched the central figure remain beyond reach. For Wall Street, the message is pragmatic. Systems matter. Distance matters. Documentation matters. If you build layers, risk flows downward. And for the public, the story lingers. A hedge fund that made billions, a network of illegal tips, a guilty plea without a handcuff moment. Too big to jail is not a slogan. It is a question, one that does not fade when the case closes. The machine is gone, the blueprint remains.